will remember something from this morning's class. So long ago. In what sense is the soul affected?
It feels pains and pleasures.
Happiness or distresses, but it actually, the person experiences this. There are three verses, 21, 22, 23, that are the basis of his questions and form the basis of the reply of Maharaj Rahugana, of Jad Bharat. But we'll get to that in a moment. But I wanted to start a little bit before. Doesn't like it sound like it's fun to be one of those. Earlier in the chapter, who asked the question yesterday? I think it was Guru Sevananda. You asked the question about what was King Rahugana's qualification that pulled out Jad Bharat from his self-induced not dealing with the world. And in the 15th verse of the 10th chapter, which is the next verse, this, the first one that was done today in the morning, it starts, Chappi Pandaveya Sindhu Saurava Patis Tattva Vigyasayam Samyak Shradhanaya Adikrita Adikaras. So, Adikrita Adikaras, or before that, Samyak Shradhaya, by faith consisting of complete control of the senses and the mind. An adhikrita adhikara, who attained the proper qualification. So in Prabhupada's translation, it says, the king of the Sindhu and Saurava states, Maharaj Rahugana, Saurava's Zarastra, yes, Gujarat. So he had great faith in the discussions of the Absolute Truth. So he had faith in Krishna Katha. And therefore, that was a great qualification that he had. Plus, he was experienced in many ways, but this seems to be exactly what it was. And then, that's on one side. On the other side, it was the causeless mercy of a great soul. And then later on in the chapter, it's interesting, considering the things that we've been talking about in text 19, what he actually asks, he glorifies, Maharaj Rahugana glorifies Jad Bharat, and then he says, he accepts him as a spiritual master, and he says, what is the most secure shelter in this world? Did Mother Narayani go over this at this point? Huh? But what is the most secure shelter in this world? And of course, the most secure shelter is not in this world at all. It's something beyond this world, transcendental to it. But very, very pure question. Aranam, secure shelter. And then in text 20, how can I advance in spiritual life? So very sincere questions. And really, the soul has a chance to advance in spiritual life when he doesn't accept, or he no longer accepts, the objects of the material world as a shelter for him. Where he goes when there is difficulty, where his mind takes shelter. Because really they are durasraya, not actual asraya. And Krishna is described in the second canto. He is the asraya. He is the shelter of what? He is the shelter of everything and everyone. Narodha mukti asraya. He is the shelter. He is, practically speaking, the only shelter, or the shelter of all shelters. So he's going to get answers on a very high level, because this is the level that he's actually asking. And that's the level that Jad Bharat is on. And then in the 21st, 22nd, and 23rd verses, he asks, Maharaj Rahugana asks these questions, finding contradictions or impracticalities or inconsistencies in the in the words that Jad Bharat has spoken. You have said, I am not fatigued from labor. Although the soul is different from the body, there is fatigue because of bodily labor. Everyone has the experience. We walk and walk and walk for 5 or 6 hours, and who feels fatigued? You can say the body is fatigued, but we all say, I am fatigued. And it's not just due to the person experiences the fatigue. So when you are carrying the palanquin, there is certainly labor for the soul, because the soul is experiencing tiredness. The person is experiencing tiredness. This is my conjecture. This is what I'm proposing. And then he says, you have also said that the external behavior exhibited between the master and the servant is not factual. Although the phenomenal world is not factual, the products of the phenomenal world can actually affect things. So we can say, he's speaking here against Mayavad philosophy, because he's misunderstanding the words of Jad Bharat as those who say that Jagat Mitya, that the world is eternal, is illusion. It has no factual reality. So therefore, since the things of this world affect other things, and we all experience this, I drop this, and it affects everyone's ears. And then, because you hear, it affects your consciousness. So, again, how can an illusion affect reality? So, as such, even though material activities are impermanent, they cannot be said to be untrue. So, because Jad Bharat hasn't expressed fully his consciousness and the real philosophy is. So he's mistaking at this point for Mayavad philosophy. And then in the 22nd verse, King Rahugana continued, my dear sir, you have said that the designations like bodily fatness and thinness are not characteristics of the soul. That is incorrect, because designations like pain and pleasure are certainly felt by the soul. So that's basically the first point again, that the soul experiences that which comes through the body. So although we could say that the soul is not fat and thin, but if the soul is affected by pain and pleasure, so what is the difference between him being affected by the fatness and thinness of the body? So he gives an example. You may put a pot of milk and rice within fire, and the milk and rice are automatically heated one after another. So you heat the milk and the rice is heated. So if the body experiences something, the soul experiences something in the same way that the rice experiences something, heat, because of its proximity with the milk, because it's near the milk. So similarly, due to bodily pains and pleasures, the senses, mind, and soul are affected. It certainly seems that way, doesn't it? The soul cannot be completely detached from this condition. So that's basically the same point as the first point. And then in the 23rd, he gives another question. My dear sir, you have said that the relationship between the king and the subject, or between the master and the servant, are not eternal. Yes, it's true, they're not eternal. But although such relationships are temporary, when a person takes the position of a king, his duty is to rule the citizen and punish those who are disobedient to the laws. By punishing them, he teaches the citizens to obey the laws of the state. So there is effect. There's a positive, proper, religious, dharmic effect upon the citizens. And therefore, how could we just simply dismiss it as illusory, non-important, etc.? However, Again, you have said that punishing a person who is deaf and dumb is like chewing the chewed or grinding the pulp, where there's nothing is to be gained by punishing someone on that level. That is to say, there is no benefit in it. However, if one is engaged in his own occupational duty as ordered by the Supreme Lord, you can't say that there's no benefit can come from it. I punish the citizens, I show them the correct way, they're brought closer to the Supreme Lord, so how could we say that there's no benefit from it? His sinful activities are certainly diminished. He gets closer, his piety increases, he's closer to Krishna. Therefore, if one is engaged in his occupational duties, even by force, and the issue was of force there, he benefits because he can vanquish all his sinful activities in that way. So it's not meaningless. You were saying that the relationship between the citizens and the king is meaningless because it's temporary, but it has a very positive and long-lasting effect. So very, very interesting questions. But Jat Bharat doesn't respond with great applause, saying this is really wonderful, because his speaking, his consciousness, his concept is fixed on a far higher level. And although from the point of view of a conditioned soul, these points sound quite reasonable, from the point of view of eternity, from the point of view of spiritual knowledge, from the point of view of a soul fixed in his eternal position, these are completely insignificant and foolish. So it depends on one's point of view. A viewpoint means the view from a particular point. And Maharaj Rahugana's viewpoint was from the point of him being an embodied soul, a conditioned soul. And on the other hand, Jat Bharat's viewpoint was from a completely liberated soul, having nothing to do with the body, realized, fixed in devotion. So naturally, there was going to be a difference of opinion. But he's accepted Jat Bharat, he's asked his questions, he's accepted him as his guru. Now Jat Bharat will begin his reply. The Brahmana Jat Bharat said, "My dear king, akovida kovida vada vadan, just like a sochananva sochas tuham. My dear king, although you are not experienced, you are trying to speak like a very experienced man. Consequently, you cannot be considered an experienced person. An experienced person does not speak the way you are speaking about the relationship between a master and a servant, or about material pains and pleasures. Because ultimately, the points that Rahugana Maharaj was making, that he's responding to here, are really just on the material level. They have to do with the bodily level, becoming exalted on the bodily level, becoming degraded on the bodily level, sinful, sinless, but still on the platform of the body and not on the platform of the soul. So therefore, Jat Bharat is not going to accept anything any more than Krishna accepted the true points that Arjuna were giving about the results of that would accrue from the battle of Kurukshetra. There was going to be so much suffering. There was going to be countless people killed. But Krishna would not come down to the material platform to answer in a way he wanted Arjuna to come up. And Jat Bharat similarly wants, he refuses to act, to answer on a platform that would allow Rahugana to stay in this material conception. An experienced person does not speak the way you are speaking about the relationship between a master and a servant, or about material pains and pleasures. They are simply external activities. They have nothing to do with the
soul.
The soul. So this type of speaking places a conditioned soul in an extremely awkward position, because he can't. This is the level of his realization is the level that he's questioning on, and Jagannath is answering on a much higher level. So he can't quite realize it, but he hears it from this authority. He asks questions again and again, but he hears quite wonderfully from this very powerful fixed authority. Jagannath continues, any advanced experienced man considering the Absolute Truth does not talk in this way. So he, as did Krishna, he first thing he does is insults his student, telling him that he's not experienced. And previously it was said that he was experienced, but he's not experienced on the spiritual level. He was quite experienced on the kingly ruling level. So Prabhupada's purport, we'll read the beginning. Krishna similarly chastised Arjuna, asochanan vasochas tvam pragyavaram sturbhasase. While speaking learned words, you are lamenting for what is not worthy of grief. Similarly, among people in general, 99.9% try to talk like experienced advisors, but they are actually devoid of spiritual knowledge and are therefore like inexperienced children speaking nonsensically. So the level, we can say that the level that Maharaj Rahugana was speaking on was a Vanashrama level. Vanashrama is often supported, even in the Bhagavatam, but ultimately it is not supported because it is a safety net. It is in the material world. It is based on one's conditioned nature. It helps one, it supports one, it protects one, and it helps one elevate, but it is not in and of itself spiritual. So sometimes it's praised and sometimes it's condemned. The same thing. Here it's condemned. Text 2. My dear king, talks of the relationship between the master and the servant, the king and subject, and so forth, are simply talks about material activities. People interested in material activities, which are expounded in the Vedas, which verse does this remind you of in Bhagavad Gita? Nice Trigunya Bhavarjuna. That you have to transcend this level. He's trying to pull him, and he will succeed in pulling him up higher. This is simply talk about material activities. People interested in material activities, which are expounded in the Vedas, are intent on performing material sacrifices and placing faith in their material activities. For such people, spiritual advancement is definitely not manifest. So these points that he's made, they are truth from the material viewpoint, but from the spiritual viewpoint, the actual spiritual viewpoint, they are not true, they are nonsensical. So here he has rejected the point of view of karma. Karmakanda point of view, increasing one's piety, decreasing one's sinful reactions for the point of view of moving throughout the universe and enjoying. Rejected by Jagannath. He is far above this. Text 3. A dream becomes automatically known to a person as false and immaterial. And similarly, one eventually realizes that material happiness in this life or the next or on this planet or a higher planet is insignificant. When one realizes this, the Vedas, although excellent sources, are insufficient to bring about direct knowledge of the truth. So what Now the subject is going to shift. He's now saying that this platform that you're speaking on is the material platform. Now the question, and then he's given hints about the platform of the soul. So the question is, here is a soul, and here is a body. And the questions that Rahugana asked Jadbarat were on these two levels. They were on the level, how could the soul be experiencing anything of the material world, the pleasures and pains? Otherwise we would accept that the soul is affected by the body. There is some compromise. And the other is, that was one set of questions, which is a very, these are jnana-oriented questions. And then the other is about the king's duty to force the citizens to engage them properly in their vanashrama duties, which is a very karma-oriented question. Now he's going to go above that. But in any case, what is it? What is that thing that connects the eternal soul to the material world? This is what he's going to speak about. Now, interestingly enough, because we've already made the parallel between Rishabhdev Maharaj's instructions to Bharat and the other sons and to us through them, to the teacher, Rishadev's instructions to what Bharat Maharaj is saying is Jadbarat. So, in Lord Rishabhdev's teachings, in the fifth verse, that's 555, he says, as long as one does not inquire about the spiritual values of life, one is defeated and subjected to miseries arising from ignorance, be it sinful or pious. Karma has its resultant actions. If a person is engaged in any kind of karma, his mind is called karmatmika, colored with food of activities. As long as the mind is impure, consciousness is unclear. And as long as one is absorbed in fruitive activity, he has to accept the material body. So there's the soul, and then there are the activities of this conditioned soul in the material world. And what is in between? Here it describes the mind. And the mind, and of course, sometimes it is called the citta in the third canto and in the teachings of, yes, chapter 26. It describes that this citta, or there are four different aspects of the same substance. It's called citta, manas, buddhi, and ahankar. The mind, consciousness, intelligence, and false ego. And depending upon how the substance is functioning, it is called one of these four things. But this substance that he's going to refer to as the mind, and as Rishabhdev has referred to now, it becomes colored, karmatmika, becomes colored by material desires. The consciousness, the mind, becomes filled with one type or another self-centered desire, and that engages the living entity in fruitive activities and forces him to take one birth after the next, after the next. So what he's going to speak about here, in most of the verses that we shall discuss today, is just this point. This intermediary between the soul and the material world called the mind. And we've discussed this already quite a few times. Rishabhdev Maharaj, that question was asked by Sukadev Goswami, by Maharaj Prickett to Sukadev Goswami, about why Rishabhdev didn't act on with use mystic powers. He was already so pure. And the reply was given by Sukadev in text, in the chapter is perhaps 6, in 2 through 5, that never trust this mind. Don't trust the mind. Bandurat matmanas tasya yenat maiva manajitaha anatmanas tu shatruve vartaitat maiva shatruvat. Don't trust the mind. The mind becomes colored with its desires and it keeps one, it will keep one forcibly within the material world, trying to satisfy the desires without any possibility of the soul itself becoming satisfied. Because the mind, after all, is subtle matter. It's subtle matter. And gross matter and subtle matter cannot satisfy the soul. So he continues here in text 4. Text 4. As long as the mind of the living entity, 4 to 17, to the end of the chapter, we'll discuss this one point basically, the mind. And how it is the be-all and end-all of all problems. It is the enemy. If it is not Krishna conscious, attached to Krishna, attracted to Krishna, it is the greatest of friends if it is attached to Krishna. So as long as the mind of the living entity is contaminated by the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, his mind is exactly like an independent, uncontrolled elephant. It simply expands its jurisdiction of pious and impious activities by using the senses. The result is, so one can think, okay, and we often think like this, okay, I might as well. This is what I am, I might as well do it, I'll enjoy this, I won't enjoy that, I don't like this, I like that. I have to be honest. But the result is, by acting within the jurisdiction of the pious and impious activities, under the holding tightly to the uncontrolled elephant of the mind, the result is that the living entity remains in the material world to enjoy and suffer pleasures and pains due to material activities. So he's going to push Rahugana. And in this way, Sukadeva Goswami is pushing Maharaj Prickett and Sutta is pushing the sages of Namasharanya. And Srila Prabhupada is pushing us. And Anata Upasamam Shakshad Bhakti Yoga Hokshaje Lokasya Ajanato Vidvam. Because we do not know that the things that our mind is grasping towards are anartis. We do not know this. So therefore, Srila Vyasadeva compiled this Satvita Samhita, the Srimad Bhagavatam, and Srila Prabhupada translated it into English. So we have an opportunity to deal with the real problem at its actual source. The real problem is my mind. And what's the problem with my mind? Is that I identify myself as the mind, and like an uncontrolled elephant goes here and there and here and there and here and there. Similarly, I am pulled, I, the soul, who is longing for something completely different, in fact, but due to this identification with the mind, I'm engaged in material activities. Well, actually, there are three things. There's me, the mind, and the body in the material world, the field of activities. And due to the mind and my identification with the mind, these three become one, in a sense, which was implied by the questions of Maharaj Rahugana. So the result is the suffering of pleasures and pains due to performance of material activities. Because the mind, this is text 5, is absorbed in desires for pious and impious activities. This is what the mind, its activity is. Accepting sometimes pious activities as its desire, sometimes impious activities. Rejecting and accepting. Rejecting and accepting. Accepting and rejecting. This is good, I want. This is no good, I reject. Icha dvesha samutena dvandva mohena bharata. Bound by these two, the heads and tails, the dualities of the mind's desiring and the material, I'm bound to this very material world. Very dangerous business. Because the mind is absorbed in desires for pious and impious activities, it is naturally subjected to the transformations of lust and anger. That's what naturally happens. In this way, it becomes attracted to material sense enjoyment. In other words, the mind is conducted by the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance. There are 11 senses and 5 material elements, and out of these 16 items, the mind is the chief. Therefore, the mind brings about birth in different types of bodies amongst demigods, human beings, animals, and birds. So he's answering Rahugana Maharaj. He's saying, this, what you're talking about is just the mental platform. This is so difficult to accept. At least theoretically, we should accept this, that this has actually nothing to do with me, this flickering on and off, I want, I hate, I want, I hate, I like, friend, enemy, this, that. It's the mind. And the mind is, it's like a big puff of smoke in the sense of it wants something. And when it really wants something, nothing else exists. Or it hates something. It's averse to something. And when it hates something, nothing else exists. And this is the only important thing in existence. It's the only thing in existence. This is what the mind does. And then if it becomes distracted by something, goes to something else, then that whole big created universe of importance suddenly is not there anymore. It's just, there's nothing there. It's like if you take, if there's a smoky room and you project, you have a projector and you project a huge snake on the smoke. Can you do something like that? Yeah. And then suddenly the smoke is sucked out of the room and the snake is gone. There was nothing there. You didn't even deal with the snake, you just dealt with the smoke. So the mind acts like that. It's so tricky. And it tends to cause a complete identification of me with that. Well, in fact, Shastra explains, there is no connection at all between me and that. Me, the soul. And that, the material desires and world. This is why... Speaking from this level is why Jadvara criticized the materially balanced questions of Maharaj Rahugana, because they were spoken from this mental platform. Therefore, the mind brings about birth in different types of bodies, amongst demigods, human beings, animals, and birds. Now, what causes one to take birth? The mind amongst the demigods. You have extreme amount of piety and you go upward. The mind is attached to that and that type of enjoyment based on the mode of goodness. Human being, mixed passion in there, want to achieve. animals, birds. So you like hang gliding? Did you ever hang glide, by the way? Hang gliding. Did you? Hang gliding? You know, they have this system where they have these very thin, very light wings. And you go up on a mountain where there's an uplift of air, and you can, it must be incredible. I've never done it. But you can, yes, we've talked about this one before, I remember. But just imagine. No horrible sound of the motor or an engine. It's wonderful, yes? There's such a freedom of feeling of freedom, and the mind is unburdened, and you're just like a bird. And I remember there was one period when I used to, many, many years ago in the 80s, I used to chant japa in the winter on top of the Gurukula building. And I got into watching the hawks that used to fly on way high in the sky. And they would, and they're so amazing because they don't exert themselves at all. They just move their back tail feathers just a little bit like this, and they just riding the wind currents up and down. So you'd like to fly? Or would you like to be a noisy group of parrots who just socialize? Could hear them out there going from one green tree to another in flocks. They're very brave, though. I've seen groups of parrots attack hawks, big powerful hawks. I've seen them attack a few parrots, attack snakes at Govanon. Brave. Parrots are brave for little green birds. So you like bravery and you like to fly? So when the mind is situated in a higher or lower position, it accepts a higher or lower material body. Depending upon the modes that affect one's mind is filled with one kind of desire or another kind of desire, and one takes a corresponding body. Adishaya manasthayam vishaya upasevate. So this is so required at this point in the Bhagavatam, because we're learning the process of becoming Krishna conscious, and so much depends upon the mind and whether it's going to be our friend or an enemy. If it's going to be filled with material desires, it's going to be our enemy. It's going to cause us so much pain. If it's going to be attached to Krishna, it's going to be our greatest friend. So we first have to understand this pivotal position of the mind, how it connects us with the material world. If it's materially captivated. We'll read from just the end of Prabhupada's purport. Material existence means, to text 5, being fully controlled by material nature. Fully controlled by material nature. It doesn't feel like that. We feel as if we have so much freedom, but material existence means being fully controlled by material nature. The mind is the center for accepting the dictations of material nature. In this way, the living entity is carried away in different types of body. Carried away. What an amazing term. Just like you might put something, potatoes in a bag, and put them over your shoulder and carry them away. So similarly, we get the soul gets put within a bag, a sack of material elements of this body and mind, and just carried away helplessly by the material nature. Millennium after millennium, for thousands and thousands of years. Krishna bhule se jivan adhyabahimu ata eva, therefore maya tari deya samsareta duk. And therefore maya will give us turning our back on Krishna. So the question is, Krishna bhule se jiv. Bhule means forgetting. So the jiva forgets Krishna. Anadi, time immemorial. Bahimukh, he's turned his back on Krishna. And the result is maya gives him this the miseries of birth and death. So the question is how to turn back to Krishna, how to turn the mind back to Krishna. And it's not easy work, is it? It's not easy because we have a very bad, long-standing habit. And what is that habit of? It's simple. We want to be the center of existence. False ego. We want to be the center. We want everything to revolve on us. And again, it's impossible. So therefore, we have to be an illusion. We have to be given an illusion. And if you think of the material world, if you can define it as a place where, a prison in which there's 6 billion humans, so many other different species of life, and each one of them has their own illusory universe that they're the center of, because this is what they want. This is what I want. And everyone, therefore, is lonely, because it's completely unnatural, because jiva sarupoi, Krishna anityadas. We're Krishna's. Krishna is ours. So back to the illusion. The materialistic mind, covering the living entity's soul, carries it to different species of life. This is called continued material existence. Due to the mind, the living entity suffers or enjoys material distress and happiness. Being thus illusion, because in the dream of material life, he's running and running and running and running from all the distress and terror he feels, or he's running towards the happiness he's trying to get. And in this way, both the distress and the happiness entangle him and illusion him still further. Thus the mind further creates pious and impious activities and their karma, and thus the soul becomes conditioned. Conditioned means accepting so many false identities which give him false limitations. So a very powerful and incredible description of material life, and it's going to continue. We found in the third canto with the teachings of Bharat Maharaj, and the fourth canto with the teachings of, the third canto with Kapila Muni's adverse fruit of activities at the end of the third canto, the fourth canto with Paranjana, and here in the fifth canto, very, very similar instructions about how to avoid the forest of material life. And then the hells are going to be described, which is the, we think anyway, pious, impious activities, I'll enjoy, I'll suffer a little bit. But when we hear about the hells, we much prefer to avoid the suffering, certainly. And that will lead us, the compassion of Maharaj, of Sukadeva, of Maharaj Parikshit, will ask, how can the souls avoid the suffering? And in response to that, Sukadeva Goswami will tell the story of Ajamil, which will glorify what? The holy names of Krishna, Hare Krishna. Just for the sheer excitement of the moment, why don't we now just say very loudly, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna! Ah. Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. And the devotees, exalted devotees, they have such an attraction for Krishna that they don't want to say anything else. They'll just chant and chant and chant and chant and chant and chant. They have such a taste, and it's still not enough for them. Not enough. They want thousands of ears and thousands of tongues. Mental activities, here's Prabhupada's purport. Not long, but we'll read it all. 2, 6. Mental activities under the influence of material nature cause happiness and distress within the material world. Being covered by illusion, the living entity eternally continues conditioned life under different designations. Such living entities are known as Nityabhaga, eternally conditioned. On the whole, the mind is the cause of conditioned life. Therefore, the entire yogic process is meant to control the mind and the senses. If the mind is controlled, the senses are automatically controlled, and therefore the soul is saved from the reactions of pious and impious activities. If the mind is engaged at the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, Savai Mana Krishna Padaravindayo, the senses are automatically engaged in the Lord's service. When the mind and senses are engaged in devotional service, the living entity naturally becomes Krishna conscious. As soon as one always thinks of Krishna, he becomes a perfect yogi, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, Yoginamapi Save Sham Madgitain Antarapanam. This antaratmana, the mind, is conditioned by material nature. As stated here, maya rachitantaratma swadehinam samsriti chakrakuta. The mind, being most powerful, covers the living entity and puts him in the waves of material existence. The mind, text 7, makes the living entity within this material world wander through different species of life, and thus the living entity experiences mundane affairs in different forms as a human being, demigod, fat person, skinny person, and so forth. Learned scholars say that the bodily appearance, bondage, and liberation are caused by the mind. We'll read from the end of Prabhupada's purport. As stated in the Narada Pancharatra, Savapari Vinir Muktam Tat Paradvena Nirmalam, when the mind and senses are purified, one's total existence is purified. And one's designations are also purified. That one's designations means one's self-conception, who I think I am. One no longer considers himself a human being, a demigod, a cat, a dog, a Hindu, a Muslim, and so forth. What a relief to be free from all these mental problems and mental designations, identifying with every flicker of the mind, identifying with being pulled here. Good mood, bad mood, up, down, happy, sad, I like this, I don't like that, here comes a person I don't like, but he doesn't like me. This, that, on and on and on and on, tortured, whipped. And then following all that is the lust and the anger and the greed and the illusion. On and on, one after another, after another, after another, in this life, and then taking a next birth and going through it again and again and again. So, Jadbharata is trying to convince Rahugana Maharaj that it's time to stop the whole identification with the mind. 8. When the living entity's mind becomes absorbed in the sense gratification of the material world, it brings about his conditioned life and suffering within the material situation. So what causes it without looking? Causes the living entity's conditioned life? Whose mind was absorbed in what? In what I was reading? Of being absorbed. But I'm just asking who, because I notice that my mind can have the tendency to be there at one moment and then it's right out the door or a convenient window and it's gone. I could be, and that's a difference, one difference between adults and children. When adults learn the art of hypocrisy and they can sit in the class and make believe they're there, Well, their mind is not there. And children, as soon as their mind leaves, they start doing all kinds of funny things. And they haven't learned the art of, you know, come on, you got to make everyone think that you're really there. I used to watch the children. They'd be doing amazing things, and especially with children with vivid imaginations, they'd be there. It was so obvious that they weren't there at all. But we master not being there, but looking like we're there. Which means we're not there, actually. However, when the mind becomes unattracted to material enjoyment, when the mind becomes... then what will happen? It becomes the cause of liberation. When the flame in a lamp burns the wick improperly, the lamp is blackened. Example. But when the lamp is filled with ghee and it is burning properly, there is bright illumination. Similarly, when the mind is absorbed in material sense gratification, it causes suffering. Are we convinced of this point? We may have our habits, mental habits, due to our sanskaras, but are we convinced about this point? When the mind is absorbed in material sense gratification, it causes suffering. This is something we should consider, or do we subtly make our plans how to enjoy this world? And when detached from material sense gratification, it brings about the original brightness of Krishna consciousness. Purport. It is therefore concluded that the mind is the cause of material existence and liberation also. Everyone is suffering in this material world because of the mind. It is therefore proper to train the mind or to cleanse the mind from material attachment and engage it fully in the Lord's service. This is called spiritual engagement. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, mam cheo vivacharena bhakti yogena sevate. One who engages in full devotional service, who does not fall down in any circumstance, what would it take? What does falling down mean? Falling down means forgetting Krishna, and then as soon as one forgets that, it's a matter of absorption again. If one is absorbed, the mind is absorbed in thinking thoughts of Krishna, Krishna's service, not like Kamsa, then one will not be in the material world. And on the other hand, if one is absorbed in thoughts of sense gratification, one is here in the material world. So it's necessary to train and cleanse the mind and to be unfailing ultimately in our absorption in Krishna consciousness. And because then one transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman, which is the platform on which bhakti takes place, the spiritual platform. So we should engage the mind fully in Krishna conscious activities. Then it will be the cause of our liberation, for our returning home back to Godhead. However, if we keep the mind engaged in material activities for sense gratification, it will cause continuous bondage and will make us remain in this material world in different bodies, suffering the consequences of our different actions. There are five working senses and five knowledge acquiring senses. There is also the false ego, abhiman, false conception of who we are. In this way, there are 11 items for the mind's functions. O hero, the objects of the senses, such as sound and touch, and organic activities, such as evacuation, and the different types of body, society, friendship, and personality, are considered by learned scholars the field of activities for the functions of the mind. All contorted by the false ego, the abhiman, molded, the whole field of activities molded around our plan to enjoy and to avoid suffering. 10. Sound, touch, form, taste, and smell are the objects of the five knowledge-acquiring senses. Speech, touch, movement, evacuation, and sexual intercourse are the objects of the working senses. Beside this, there is another conception by which one thinks, this is my body, this is my society, this is my family, this is my nation, and so forth. This 11th function, ekadasam svi karanam mameti, that of the mind, is called the false ego. According to some philosophers, this is the 12th function, and its field of activities is the body. So ekadasam, the 11th, svi karanam, accepting mama, mine, iti, thus, sayam, this body, aham. So the function of the mind by which we accept the body as me is called false ego. So how deeply to crack this, how deeply, because this is the core of our material existence, how deeply do we have, to break that and to have a powerful identification as this Gopi Bhakta Parakamalaya Dasa Dasa Nadasa, as a servant of Guru, Gauranga, Krishna, deities. But this conception of this is me, it is so strong. Somewhere perhaps in the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says that even a sadhu, maybe you remember where this is from, even a sadhu has a hard time, maybe it's from the Bhagavatam, breaking his identification with his country. Very, very deep. Very, very deep, these identifications. But unless we break them, and therefore Rahugana is speaking so strong, is being spoken to so strongly by Jad Bharat, to break this concept of the body and mind being oneself, must be purified. And this concept of self has to be changed, that I am Krishna. And therefore, we take initiation, and that's the basic, primary significance of that, because the body, with tilak, means that the body is Krishna's temple. We get a name, which is Krishna Dasa or Dasi in one form or another, and it's supposed to indicate a shift in consciousness of self, who we identify ourselves as, from the body, member of a family to and country, to I am a servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna. The physical elements, nature, the original cause, what's the original cause? The what coming from Krishna? Oh yeah, okay. This is the swabhava by the nature. I think it's the cause of development. Culture, destiny, and the time elements are all material causes. Agitated by these material causes, the 11 functions transform into hundreds of functions, and then into thousands, and then millions. So all these different conceptions and functioning of the mind are like a huge web that entangle us in material existence. But all these transformations do not take place automatically by mutual combination, rather they are under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's Maya Dakshena Prakriti Suyate Satcharacharan. Aituna Nena Prabhupada quotes that in his purport. Jagan, it's all going Maya Adiyaksha, under Krishna's supervision. The individual soul, bereft of Krishna consciousness, has many ideas and activities created in the mind by the external energy. So heavy. I find this is so heavy because it's so pointed. Because we at least I can speak for myself, so much identify with the ideas all these things said over here, the ideas and activities, but they are just created by the in the mind by the external energy. And I identify with these completely as me, and I'm so proud of them when they're working properly, what I consider properly. And this means repeated birth and death. They have been existing since time immemorial. Fresh created idea. Prabhupada would just laugh at that. What is new? Same thing. Same thing. Everyone is just crying in agony. Sometimes they are manifest in the awakening state and in the dream state, but during deep sleep, unconsciousness, or trance, they disappear. A person who is liberated in this life, Jivan Mukta, can see all these things vividly. So, here's where these things, I had it written down here to look at that text that I read earlier, that Rishabh Dev Maharaj said that the colorings of the mind are the cause of our being, our material existence. The coverings meaning the desires that are within the mind. They color our mind. Consciousness is originally clear. Even the first covering of sattva-gun, of the consciousness, it's clear. But then passion, ignorance, so many desires come. And color the mind, the consciousness, causing us to run here, Brahmanda Brahmate, wandering throughout the universe, searching for the fulfillment of another one of these, one of millions and billions of desires that have been combined by the material energy into my mind and which I identify with. So learned scholars, the individual soul bereft of Krishna consciousness has many ideas and activities created in the mind by the external energy. They have been existing since from time immemorial. There's nothing new. Sometimes they are manifest in the awakening state, in the dream state, but during deep sleep, unconsciousness, or trance, they disappear. A person who is liberated in this life, Jivan Mukta, can see all these things vividly. We'll just read from the end of this purport, perhaps it's halfway down, a little more than that. The eternally conditioned soul is eternally conditioned because he is controlled by the mind. The conditioned state and liberation are compared to the sleeping, unconscious state and the awakened state. Those who are sleeping and unconscious are eternally conditioned, but those who are awake understand they are eternally part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Therefore, even in this material world, they engage in Krishna's service, as confirmed by Srila Rupa Goswami, Iha Yasya Hareya Dasye. If one takes the Krishna consciousness within the material world, even though he appears to be, if one takes the Krishna service, he is liberated, even though he appears to be a conditioned soul within the material world. That means that one has a full identification with being Krishna's servant. Servant of Guru, servant of Gauranga, Krishna, Vaishnavas. He is liberated even though he appears to be in the material world. Jivan Mukta Suchate. In any condition, one is to be considered liberated if his only business is to serve Krishna. And then the final verses we shall read, and we'll read. We're supposed to go up to 14, I believe, yes? Yeah, okay. There are two kinds of Kshetragya. The living entity is explained above, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that last verse described the living entity, the individual soul bereft of Krishna consciousness. Now this verse will describe the other Kshetragya, the Lord, the other type of soul, the Jivatma and the Paramatma. The living entity is explained above, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is explained as follows. He is the all-pervading cause of creation. He is full in himself and is not dependent on others. He is perceived by hearing and direct perception. He's self-effulgent and does not experience birth, death, old age, or disease. He is the controller of all the demigods, beginning with Lord Brahma. He is called Narayan, and he is the shelter of all living entities after the annihilation of this material world. So that question, who is the ultimate shelter, the secure shelter? Well, he is the shelter, even from the annihilation of the entirety of the material world. He is full of all opulences, and he is the resting place of everything material. He is therefore known as Vasudev, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By his own potency, he is present within the hearts of all living entities, just as the air or vital forces within the bodies of all beings, moving and non-moving. In this way, he controls the body. In his partial feature, the Supreme Personality of Godhead enters all bodies and controls them. Oh yes, we were supposed to finish the chapter. I knew we had to do that. The soul's designations. So he's now answering directly the questions that he's asked in 21 through 23 of the previous chapters, doubts. The soul's designation, the mind, is the cause of all tribulations in the material world. As long as this fact is unknown to the conditioned living entity, he has to accept the miserable condition of the material body and wander within this universe in different positions. Because the mind is affected by disease, lamentation, illusion, attachment, greed, and enmity, it creates bondage and a false sense of intimacy within this material world. A false sense of intimacy. And this is what we long for in the material world, that false sense of intimacy. My home, when we get to our country, there's that feeling of being home, of intimacy, family, etc., dearest of friends in the material level. Purport. The mind is the cause of both material bondage and liberation. The impure mind thinks, I am this body. The pure mind knows that he is not the material body, therefore the mind is considered to be the root of all material designations. Until the living entity is aloof from the association and contamination of this material world, the mind will be absorbed in such material things as birth, death, disease, illusion, attachment, greed, and enmity. So the answer to the question that he asked about the soul experiencing the fatigue that the body experiences and the pain that the body experiences and the pleasure that the body experiences is that this is simply the mind. The mind as the intermediary agent, because of the soul's identification with the mind, the soul has to experience the pain and pleasure of the body and the birth and the death, etc. Very, very heavy. Very heavy. In this way, the living entity is conditioned and he suffers material miseries. And then the final verse in an important purport by Prabhupada. This uncontrolled mind is the greatest enemy of the living entity. If one neglects it or gives it a chance, it will grow more and more powerful and will become victorious. And if the mind becomes victorious, we lose. Although it is not factual, it is very strong. It covers the constitutional position of the soul. Now, what is the cure for this incredible entity that it is not factual but strong? O King, please try to conquer this mind by the weapon of service to the lotus feet of the spiritual master and of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Do this with great care. This is just what Kapila Muni also proposed, that the process was to become attached break attachment to the material world, become attached to a sadhu, but not in a sentimental way, but then hear Shastra, and in that way become attached to Krishna. Do this with great care. And the alternative is great, great, great suffering. Here's Prabhupada's purport. There is one easy weapon with which the mind can be conquered. Neglect. That means what? What does that mean?
Ignore it.
Very easy to do, isn't it? And what happens if you succeed for a short time? The mind will give you, from now on I'm going to neglect the mind, I'm just going to chant Hare Krishna. And if you succeed, tomorrow your mind will give you such a big kick, because it's a fight to the death. The mind's business is to protect the full sense of self. It's heavy, it's very heavy. Especially if one doesn't have a mind that's in the mode of goodness. Then it's so satisfied and peaceful, then it doesn't want to become ruffled or disturbed. So it has a different weapon. But it's heavy. The mind is heavy business. It keeps us in the material world and throws away the key. Yeah, far away too. Or at least hides it in a place where it's very difficult to find it, but Prabhupada is telling us what to do. The mind is always telling us to do this or that. Therefore, we should be very expert in disobeying the mind's orders. Gradually, the mind should be trained to obey the orders of the soul. It is not that one should obey the orders of the mind. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in case we forgot the previous mention the Prabhupada made of this, used to say that to control the mind, one should beat it with shoes many times just after awakening and again before going to sleep, but that time with broomsticks. In this way, one can control the mind. This is the instruction of all the shastras, to control the mind. If one does not do so, one is doomed to follow the dictations of the mind. Another bona fide process, so that is one bona fide process, and here's another one, is to abide strictly by the orders of the spiritual master and engage in the Lord's service. So that means that the mind is neglected and one becomes a servant of the lotus feet of one's spiritual master, and one just simply does what he tells you to do. Another easy thing, right? But this is the methodology to become, subdue the mind by becoming not the master, but a servant of Guru. I like it, I don't like it, my mind is disturbed, my mind is happy by it. I just do it. Because I'm his servant. The mind is automatically controlled by that service attitude. Then the mind will be automatically controlled. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has instructed Sri Rupa Goswami, Brahmanda Brahmate Kona Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Pasari Pai Bhakti Lata Beach. When one receives the seed of devotional service by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one's real life begins. If one abides by the orders of the spiritual master, by the grace of Krishna, he is freed from service to the mind. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 5th canto, 11th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Zadbarat Instructs King Rahugana. What do you think of that? You're going to answer that specific question, or you have a question for me? Yes, Shastra. Shastra has to be the basis. So therefore, without training in Shastra, where will the intelligence get its basis from discrimination from? Because the intelligence business is to discriminate. The way I look at it is it creates categories. in the mind, in the consciousness. And the mind's business is to take a thought and place it or not place it in a, or it has to place it in some category. This is good, this is bad, I accept, I reject from the different categories. So what to do in a particular circumstance, the intelligence, if trained in Shastra, creates the proper categories within the consciousness for the mind. And if the mind is obedient to the intelligence, which is obedient to Shastra, trained Shastra, it will work fine. But there's a lot of ifs in there. If the process is reversed, on the other hand, that the mind becomes attached to this something that the senses want, which is basically what you're saying, but you just started it on the level up. And then the intelligence starts making its plans and calculations based on the mind says, I want, because the senses want, then one's really in trouble, certainly. Especially in the age of Kali. The soul, technically speaking, the soul's consciousness cannot be contaminated. It's a covering. It's chitta, ahankar, buddhi, and mana. It's a covering. It's the covering over the soul. This is described in the third canto. It's a covering over the soul. And then we identify with the covering due to maya, due to illusion, as opposed to the actual soul's consciousness. And why do we do that? Because we don't want to act like souls. Because soul means servant of Krishna. And we don't want to serve Krishna. There is an aversion to serving Krishna. There is a turning the back on Krishna. It's not alive. It's not alive. But we speak of it as an entity sometimes. If there was no soul, there's no mind. So that's what the Mayavadis do, the impersonalists try to do, to get rid of the suffering of the mind. They'll go to the extent of getting rid of the soul, the identity of the soul, because they're so tired of suffering. That's just what they do. The greatest gift of Krishna's is our individual existence. Because with that, even though we're insignificant, if we connect our consciousness with Him through bhakti, our happiness, put in a simple way, can be raised to His happiness. He's God, we're insignificant. We can enjoy on the same level as Him. So it's His greatest gift. And yet, there's such a deep aversion to being a servant of Krishna that souls will even rather get rid of their individuality than serve Krishna. Yes, four. We're pretty close to the end, so.
That one third of the soul has a weakness in.
Upadashanamantacha bhakti bhakti
bhakti. That one. So now, in looking at the mind,
but not because he wants to. Without his facilitation, because without him being there, nothing works.
Somehow,
that's the process of bhakti. That wasn't what Prabhupada emphasized. But yes. Because there are. Prabhupada gave two bona fide processes of controlling the mind, but those aren't the only bona fide processes. There are others. Raghunath Das Goswami has another one, pleading with the mind. This is the kind of thing I planned on discussing in the class that I hope to give on chanting Hare Krishna in the mind. Begging for Krishna's mercy.
Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srimad Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhaktivinoda ki jai.